from deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like must close.
A lot of that going around. Well, a lot of something going around. Tesla reported its second quarter production and delivery numbers this week. It delivered 384,122 vehicles. That's a 14% decrease in deliveries from the second quarter of last year. The second consecutive year-over-year drop. The sales by Tesla have been sputtering, according to the British tech journal The Register, have been sputtering for some time. Concerns have mounted over things like stale inventory, and the Cybertruck didn't help all that much, and Musk's, you know, other show, particularly his antics, so-called, at X, the underwhelming delivery of Tesla's invite-only robo-taxi pilot fleet in Austin, Texas, didn't help either. When Musk does pay attention to Tesla, he's reportedly ignoring the regular Tesla cars people actually seem to want to buy in favor of his delayed robo-taxis. They'll be here any... And autonomous Optimus robots, the latter which have so far shown up primarily in pre-recorded demos. You can't have a live robot. Would he? The Optimus program is reportedly paused following the departure of its chief, Milan Kovac, in June. Optimus, Musk had previously suggested it would be shipping to consumers by next year, is reportedly in limbo as not doing the, you know, in as design changes are made to address the fact that the bots are not even capable of doing the factory work Tesla had hoped for. They wanted to, you know, fire some employees, and it's the thing these days, isn't it? It's not clear whether Musk intends to step into that vacant role at Optimus. Apparently, he's already assumed oversight of Tesla's sales in the U.S. and Europe after another former official, Omid Afshar, departed late last month. According to recent research by Forrester, Tesla owners love their cars, but, quote, the company fails to connect with potential buyers, unquote, many of whom consider the brand not worth a purchase. One can conclude, ladies and gentlemen, from this news, being a jerk doesn't always work. Hello, welcome to the show.
Communist pacified the passive. past all sorrow. Real life shall resume tomorrow.
From New Orleans, this is Harry Shearer. Yeah, me. That's me. Welcoming you to this edition of the show. Hi. Welcome. There are no seats in the front. Ladies and gentlemen, it's heating up this crypto winter. A little-known crypto fund bought $100 million worth of World Liberty Financial tokens. That's a company owned by the Trump family. This is the second Middle East-based investor to pour money into the Trump family-affiliated decentralized finance platform. We call it DeFi, don't we? Because it sounds like DeFi. United Arab Emirates-based Aqua One Foundation says it purchased the so-called governance tokens in a joint statement Thursday with World Liberty Financial. They had a joint. This is from Bloomberg, by the way. The investment will make Aqua One the largest individual investor of the Trump-backed digital asset project, surpassing crypto entrepreneur Justin Sun. I found you, Justin Sun, who's also an advisor to World Liberty. In May, MGX, a technology investment firm established by Abu Dhabi's sovereign wealth fund, used World Liberty's stablecoin to facilitate its $2 billion investment in the cryptocurrency exchange Binance. Just seems circulating around in the investment by foreign entities with ties to sovereign nations has sparked an outcry among critics of the Trump administration. They still exist over the potential for influence peddling. The administration and World Liberty have said there aren't any conflicts of interest. What would those be? Because we are taking billions from nations in the Middle East with the thing. Blockchain data shows that a digital wallet called Aqua1ETH received a total of 800 million WLFI, World Liberty Financial tokens, in three batches. They come in batches. About 2 weeks ago, the investment will be used to develop blockchain-powered financial applications, including stablecoins and digitizing traditional assets, according to the statement. Because those traditional assets are way too analog. World Liberty, which announced last year that it plans to launch an application for crypto lending. Yeah, a lender bee. It currently has only one product, the dollar-backed stablecoin, USDI, that has about $2.2 billion in market value after being used for the Binance transaction. It's a summertime version of a crypto winter. And now, news of the warm, won't you? I think I will.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
The snow and ice accumulated last winter by Switzerland's glaciers has already melted away, according to a monitoring service reported by Agence France-Presse. Ma, the French. I said it myself just to save wars some time. Friday marked the alarming second earliest arrival on record of the tipping point known as Glacier Loss Day. Hey, happy Glacier Loss Day, everybody. All further melting between now and October, we'll see the size of glaciers in the Swiss Alps shrink. That's according to glacier monitoring in Switzerland. The tipping point on average this century has been reached in mid-August. Itself already bad news for the nation's 1,400 glaciers, which are shrinking at a staggering rate. Didn't know glaciers could stagger, but you know, its arrival several weeks earlier on July 4th is another alarm call, said the chief of the Glacier Monitoring Service, Matthias Huss. It's like the glaciers are shouting out, "We're disappearing, help us." Glaciers in the Swiss Alps began to retreat about 170 years ago. The retreat was initially modest, but in recent decades, melting has accumulated and accelerated significantly as the climate thing warms, maybe. The volume of Swiss glaciers shrank by 38% between 2000 and 2024. Says Hess, if we have a glacier loss day, it means that the glacier is losing mass. For a glacier that's healthy, the day would occur at the end of September or in October, or not at all, he said. With no glacier loss day, summer would simply melt away only the snow that accumulated the previous winter. From now on, all melt that occurs on glaciers until October is unsustainable, says Hess. So, unhappy Glacier Loss Day, everybody. And although many of us spend allergy season cursing out plant pollen, spores from mold and other fungi also deserve some of the same disdain, according to the University of Michigan's GeoHealth Office. These invisibly small agitators tend to fly under the radar, despite being capable of causing the same sneezes, sniffles, and in some cases, severe respiratory issues. And these stealthy allergens are sneaking up on us earlier than ever before. That's according to new research led by the University of Michigan and published in the journal GeoHealth. Quote, over the past 2 decades, fungal spore seasons in the U.S. have shifted significantly due to climate change. This has implications for both ecosystem processes and human health. That's the words of Royan Wu, a leader of the research project. She's now pursuing her doctoral degree at the University of Florida. Guess she didn't like the winters in Michigan. Against a backdrop of changing temperatures and precipitation patterns, Wu and her colleagues performed the first large-scale systemic study of outdoor fungal spore abundance across the United States between 2003 and 2022. Sounds like a fun study, just looking for fungal spores. But this was made possible by data collected at 55 pollen counting stations. That's run by the U.S. National Allergy Bureau, unless Elon has closed that down. The researchers found that on average, spore allergy season was kicking off 22 days earlier in 2022 than it had been in 2003. So, later for the glaciers, earlier for the fungal spores. News of the warm. And now, news of the godly. An Olmsted County, Minnesota jury has awarded a man $7.6 million in a civil suit involving the Diocese of Winona, Rochester, over allegations of sexual abuse that took place 5 decades ago. A case brought forward by a man now in his late 60s alleges that the Reverend Joseph Cashman sexually abused him as a child for 3 years, 1973 to 76. At the time, Cashman was principal. I said principal at Lord's High School in Rochester. The case was one of a handful brought this year against the diocese. That diocese had reached a $25.5 million settlement agreement with 145 people who were sexually abused by its clergy. This from the Minnesota Star Tribune. That settlement also included $6.5 million from 2 insurers, but did not include one of the diocese's primary insurance companies, U.S. Fire. Well, they didn't have a fire. Jeff Anderson, the attorney representing the victim, said Monday's verdict, however, holds U.S. Fire liable, could set a new precedent for holding insurers for other dioceses accountable for abuse allegations. Quote, to me, this breaks the barrier of the insurance industry, in this case, U.S. Fire, but they've all stood in lockstep refusing to pay, Anderson said. That is now going to change and give hope to all the survivors across Minnesota and across the country, unquote. Allegations of sexual abuse against Cashman go back as far as the 1960s, when he's first ordained as a priest. Well, he might as well start young. During his time in southeast Minnesota, he was assigned to schools and parishes in Rochester, Mankato, and Winona. But Cashman was suspended from active ministry in 1992, but was not permanently removed from ministry until years later, 2015, after the diocese disclosed him as one of 14 clergy members who had been credibly accused of sexual misconduct with children. And the good news for him, he died in 2018 at the good old age of 84. Something keeps you young. A longtime music teacher at a Catholic school in the New Orleans area recently lost his job when it was revealed to an evidently disgruntled parent that he was another man's widower. That ignited a scandal within the archdiocese, which has otherwise largely been occupied with trying to reorganize its finances in federal bankruptcy court after its clergyman spent decades sexually molesting children. Oddly enough, this is from The Guardian. They could see it from that far away. In an email to community members at the archdiocese-run school from which he was dismissed, Mark Richards explained he'd been fired because a parent notified officials about an obituary for his husband, who died of a heart attack a couple of years ago. Richardson's email alluded to how his employment contract at a school in Metairie, just west of New Orleans, contained a morality clause prohibiting educators from, quote, contracting a marriage in violation of the rules of the Catholic Church, quote, actively engaging in homosexual activity, unquote, along with other conduct that the document maintains is inconsistent with the teachings of the religion. He wrote, did Richards, that he signed the annually renewable contract and morality clause required of all the archdiocese's teachers, but historically it's been far from universally enforced. He signed it with a wink and a nudge, since it was no big secret that I am gay. The community of the school was comfortable enough with his marriage to his husband that everyone at the school was very sympathetic and supportive after his husband's death. That changed when the parent who alerted local church officials to the obituary, which listed Richards as the husband, complained. Said he was fired June 25 as a music teacher and band director after 21 years at the school. The reason for this termination, he said, is I'm a gay man. Not a gay journalist, just a gay man. I've not been in violation of the morality clause for the last 2 years. No one can find any incident of my acting inappropriately with anyone, let alone a student, added Richards. He said all his superiors would tell him he was, you're fired. I guess they were watching The Apprentice. After a parent whose identity was shielded reported discovering his being mentioned in the obituary. Local TV station WDSU reported Richardson's email garnered him sympathy from many parents at the school, which ousted him. The station and local newspaper, the Times-Picayune, reported that school administrators sent an email to the community confirming it had not renewed Richardson's contract, while claiming that he had not provided a fully accurate description of his employment situation. Administrators said they couldn't elaborate, making a reference to unspecified legal considerations. This decision is final and will not be revisited, said school officials. Richards reportedly said, it's just a stab in the back. St. Francis, the school where he taught, is one of numerous archdioceses of New Orleans affiliates that are being counted on to contribute what's expected to be a nine-figure settlement resolving the bankruptcy protection case filed by archdiocesan leaders way back in 2020. Those officials made that Chapter 11 filing mainly in an attempt to dispense with hundreds of clergy molestation claims dating back decades. As of last Sunday, the most recent settlement offer was for the Archdiocese, its affiliates, and its insurers to pay between $180 and $230 million to about 600 abuse survivors. But attorneys representing hundreds of those survivors opposed the deal, saying it's far less than the $323 million settlement approved in late 2024 in a similar case involving the Archdiocese of Rockville Center, Long Island, New York. Sorry, Long Island. News of the godly.
Direct from the Oval Office, where I just finished signing the big, beautiful bill with a big, beautiful pen. This is your favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Jewelry. Makes the ugliest bag a glamour queen. This week we had the biggest political victory since nobody has ever seen. Nothing could make me happier than seeing a room full of Democrats crying harder than a loser on The Apprentice. I said I hate them, and the fake media jumped on that as maybe encouraging violence, which is just usual stupid journalistic malpractice. Here's the truth, without even the social. I hate people all the time, and I don't kill them. Almost never. Another case of the disgusting morons in the media getting things wrong like nobody has ever read. I said all through the debate on the big, beautiful bill, and nothing has been more beautiful since I built Trump Tower Cleveland, that your Medicaid won't be cut. Now the monstrous lunatics with cameras say the bill is doing just that, which just tells you how bad their hearing must be. I said very clearly, and so often that I remembered it, that we won't cut your Medicaid. I never said anything about somebody else's Medicaid. You could look it up, or you could just take my word for it, which is what I do. And of course, the idiots and the sickos with the microphones attacked me for my statement after we obliterated, and it was an obliteration. Everybody who knows anything about obliteration agrees. My statement about Israel and Iran still fighting. I said these were two countries that didn't know what the suck they were doing. And if you watch the tape, it's clear I said suck and not something else, because why wouldn't I say suck? It's what I actually meant, and it's a great word. Many world leaders use it. It's a very fine part of our language. But to listen to the media monkeys, I said a different word, which I would never do. I know a lot of words, but that one isn't even in my vocabulary. I know because I had people check my vocabulary. If the rancid media maggots continue to infest our national airwaves, They better watch out. Pam Bondi just might know where they live. Until next time, stay loyal.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Hardware, where everything looks like a nail. So long.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip, hip, hooray.
Oh, thank you so much, Ralph. Really lovely to hear your imitation voice. A study of AI chat sessions has shown people tend to have more empathy with a chatbot if they think it is human. 9 studies involving 6,000-plus participants found humans are more likely to reject emotional support from LLM, large language model-based chatbots, unless they're told that they're talking to a human. You are talking to a human. This is from the Register in the British Tech Journal. Research published in Nature Human Behavior said that some AI models show remarkable abilities to engage with social-emotional situations and to mimic expressions of interpersonal emotional reactions, such as empathy, compassion, and care, unquote. This is what comes of letting them speak in the first person singular, something I pointed out in this program a little while ago. I think you're not crazy is different from this machine thinks you're not crazy. AI may help with social interaction and provide emotional support, according to the publication. Since earlier studies have shown that large language model-powered tools can determine a human's emotional state and that their responses can be perceived as empathetic, an associate professor at Hebrew University in Jerusalem and her colleagues studied the subject's response to AI conversations. Participants were told that the responses were either written by a human or by a chatbot, even though they all came from an AI. Subject had some empathy with all responses. They tended to have more with responses they falsely believed came from a human. Who needs humans? An innovative artificial intelligence system can predict the decisions people will make in a wide variety of situations, often outperforming classical theories used in psychology to describe human choices. This is from Nature. Why are they writing about AI? Nature is not, that's not part of it. The researchers who developed the system called Centaur fine-tuned a large language model using a massive set of data from 160 psychology experiments. That's not really massive. 160? Oh, in which 60,000 people made more than 10 million choices across many tasks. See how they multiply it into something important? Most computer models and cognitive theories stick to a single task. For instance, DeepMind's AlphaGo can only play the strategy game Go. Prospect theory can only predict how a person will choose between potential losses and gains. Centaur, by contrast, can simulate human behavior across a spectrum of tasks. Your gambling, your memory games, and your problem solving. During testing, it was even able to predict people's choices in tasks it had not been trained on. The team that created the system thinks it would one day become a valuable tool in cognitive science. Quote, you can basically run experimental sessions in silico instead of running them in actual human participants, says the study co-author, Marshall Binns, at the Helmholtz Institute for Human-Centered AI in Munich. That could be useful when conventional studies would be too slow, he says, or when it's difficult to recruit children or people with psychiatric conditions. You mean madmen don't want to be in experiments? Building theories in cognitive science is very difficult, says Giosu Baggio, a psycholinguist at the Norwegian Institute, University of Science. It's exciting to see what we can come up with the help from machines, unquote. Binns and his colleagues wanted to overcome the limitations of previous research on trying to predict human behavior. Spent 5 days fine-tuning Llama, an LLM released by Meta, with a huge behavioral data set called Psych 101. The researchers tuned the model to predict not just an average behavior for a given task, but the range of typical behaviors in the population. Then they tested how well it predicted the behavior of participants who were not included in the training data set. You know, but one of 32 tasks, Centaur outperformed Llama and 14 cognitive and statistical models in predicting what choices participants would make. The one outlier, a task in which participants judged whether sentences were grammatically correct. Well, everyone can tell that. A new policy, Law 360, the legal news service owned by LexisNexis, now requires that every story pass through an AI-powered bias detection tool before publication. The Law 360 Union, which represents editorial staffers, has denounced the mandate since it went into effect in mid-May. Mid-June, the chair of the union branch, Haley Conneth, sent a petition to management calling for the tool to be made completely voluntary. As journalists, he says, we should be trusted to select our own tools of the trade to do our information gathering, reporting, and editing, not pressured to use unproven technology against our will. That was a petition signed by over 90% of the union members. Law 360 reaches over 2.8 million daily newsletter subscribers with breaking legal news and analysis. At the end of last year, the newsroom began experimenting with a suite of AI tools built in-house to streamline story production. One of those tools analyzes the overall bias of article drafts and picks out lines of copy that should be edited to sound more impartial. Well, that's crazy. Oh, no, sorry. I just edited that out. Use of the tool, later known as the bias indicator, was voluntary until mid-May, when editor-in-chief Ann Erda notified the union in an email that moving forward, the use of AI tools was mandatory for all stories, particularly applying a neutral voice to copy. She also named several other mandatory use cases like headline writing, story tagging, and article refinement and editing. In an email sent to editorial staff the following day, Erda said the leadership was exploring how to increase usage of its AI tools through the mandates, but otherwise provided no explanation for the policy change. But the announcement came a few weeks after an executive at the parent company of Law 360 accused the newsroom of liberal political bias in its coverage of the felon in chief. Would you pay $169 for an introductory ebook on machine learning with citations that appear to be made up? If not, you might want to pass on purchasing Mastering Machine Learning from Basics to Advanced, published by Springer a couple months ago. This from RetractionWatch.com. Based on a tip from a reader, they checked 18 of the 46 citations in the book. Two-thirds of them either did not exist or had substantial errors. Three researchers cited in the book confirmed that the works they supposedly authored were fake or the citation contained substantial errors. The researcher who asked to remain anonymous, who tipped us all off to this, had received an alert from Google Scholar about the book, which cited him. His name appeared on multiple citations, but the cited works don't exist. Non-existent and error-prone citations are a hallmark of text generated by large language models like your ChatGPT. These models don't search literature databases for published papers the way a human author would. Instead, they generate content based on training data and prompts. So large language model generated citations could look legitimate, but the content of the citations might well be fabricated. Here's another mandate. Microsoft is asking some managers to evaluate employees based on how much they use AI internally. The software giant is considering adding a metric related to this in its review process. This is from Business Insider. Julia Liuson, president of a Microsoft division responsible for tools involving AI, recently sent an email instructing managers to evaluate employee performance based on their use of internal AI tools. Quote, AI is now a fundamental part of how we work, just like collaboration, data-driven thinking, and effective communication. Using AI is no longer optional. It's core to every role and every level. Liuson told managers AI should be part of your holistic reflections on an individual's performance and impact, unquote. Meanwhile, there's a fake rock band created entirely by AI. Despite a plethora of images available online for that outfit, The Velvet Sundown, and nearly 500,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, The Velvet Sundown is entirely AI-generated. The band started getting recommended to Spotify users. Music lovers started digging the four-piece band that fuses, quote, 1970s psychedelic textures with cinematic alt-pop and dreamy analog soul, unquote. The band members even have names. Gabe Farrow on vocals, Lenny West on guitar, bass player Milo Raines, and free-spirited percussionist Orion Rio Del Mar. Quote, the band feels like a hallucination you want to stay lost in, unquote, a description. The AI images of the band members started alarming, or at least alerting, people like Redditors and TikTokers. They realized there was something off about the band, likely because of the group photos that have a distinct uncanny feel to them. Music author Chris Dalla Riva on TikTok says the vocals also have a metallic sheen that is common among AI-generated vocals and photos. Metallica's good, right? News of AI. Now news of a different kind of intelligence. Dr. Phil's TV network, Merritt Street Media, filed for bankruptcy this week, suing the Christian television giant Trinity Broadcasting Network and TCT Ministries for allegedly harming its business and contributing to its financial woes. The lawsuit claims that TBN, the network's broadcast partner, backed out of its obligations and instead abused its position as the controlling shareholder. As a result, Dr. Phil's network claims it was forced to pay or incur obligations to third parties in excess of $100 million. These failures by TBN were neither unintended nor inadvertent, says Dr. Phil's outfit. Spokesperson said this network is suing CBN for failing to provide clearly agreed upon national distribution and other significant foundational commitments critical to the network's continuing success and viability. According to the lawsuit, Dr. Phil's network's troubles began almost immediately after it was established way back in January 2023, when Dr. Phil's production company first partnered with TBN, which puts out faith and worship-based content, as the world's largest Christian network. Under the venture, the Christian television company was expected to cover distribution and production services at no cost, according to the suit. TBN was also expected to make certain payments to Dr. Phil's production company, and the company would provide new programming, including original episodes of the Dr. Phil show. Instead, the lawsuit alleges TBN reneged on its responsibilities, advancing its own interest. TBN didn't respond to a request for comment. But Dr. Phil did.
Today on the Dr. Phil Show, Dr. Phil. And now, here's Dr. Phil.
Yankees.
Thank you for joining us today. We've got a guest who for years has made all of Texas proud. He's now in a bit of hot water, and he's come here in search of some cold water, but more importantly, some empathy and maybe even some help. Please welcome to the Dr. Bill stage, Dr. Phil. Thank you. Dr. Phil, welcome.
Thank you. I have to tell you, coming out here, I thought I might be a little nervous, but I really feel right at home.
Well, that's probably because this is your old set. We bought it just before the bankruptcy was filed.
Well, I'm glad it found a good home.
Well, which, as I understand it, is more than we can say about you. Let's hear what it was like for you to have to go into bankruptcy.
Well, I had a pretty darn good life, Dr. Bill. Mm-hmm. My syndicated show lasted for 21 seasons. I had my own line of semi-approved antidepressants, and I shared a private island with Dr. Oz. Now he's in the government and I'm in court.
So let's drill down a little deeper. What was it that upset your personal apple cart? That's our way of asking what made you desperate enough to come here.
Well, I had a feeling that the Dr. Phil thing had become more than just an hour every afternoon before the early local news. I thought I deserved my own network.
Just so you'd have a place to sell your pills 24 hours a day?
Well, I was part of it, I got to be honest. I can't lie to you. You're so much like me, it hurts. And you've got my set.
Yeah.
But I really thought that with my own network, I could help a lot more people. At least in my own family.
Oh, family is important, no doubt about that. So who helped the network get started? Did you raise money from former guests on your program?
Well, you know, in retrospect, I wish I had done that. But, no, I got into business with a Christian TV network in Orange County, California.
Well, had you checked them out beforehand?
A little bit. I watched some of their programming, Paul and Jan Crouch and such. And I guess I thought, you know, Orange County, Christian, so far away from the New York or L.A. people that the entertainment business seems to favor, I was going to be in better hands.
You know, I think I detect a certain antipathies towards a certain group of people, Dr. Phil, specifically people who aren't Christian and from Orange County. Can you face that reality?
Well, to tell you the truth, Dr. Bill, I don't think I'm ready to face any reality right now, especially on this set. but we had some great programming, me embedding with ICE in Chicago and some different things. And these people played money games with us, didn't connect us up with a lot of cable systems.
Well, but Dr. Phil, wasn't the cable business in the midst of a consequential loss of subscribers right at this time? Don't you think, reflecting on your thinking, that you didn't give that fact enough consideration in what you could expect?
Well, this Christian network is on a lot of cable systems, and I guess I thought mistakenly that we could just piggyback on their coverage map. And all they kept saying in response was, talk more about Jesus. So, you know, they were making me feel guilty at the same time that I was feeling cheated. And that's when I started taking my own semi-approved antidepressants.
Well, sir, I don't think being on this program is going to help you all that much. I'm going to suggest you spend a month or two at the Dr. Bill house. Is that something you would consider doing, you know, for your own good?
Well, I'll do anything for my own good. That's why I'll be confronting these people in bankruptcy court.
All right. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to make that happen, and we'll check in with you in a few weeks. Dr. Phil, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. And next time, we'll try to unpack the Sean Diddy Combs case with his own private psychoanalyst. Until then, take good care of each other.
The Dr. Bill Show is a Dr. Bill production. Now, the apologies of the week.
Yes, sir.
so sorry.
The University of Pennsylvania says it's going to update records set by transgender swimmer Leah Thomas and apologize to female athletes disadvantaged by Thomas's participation on the women's swimming team. This is part of a resolution of a federal civil rights case. U.S. Education Department and Penn announced the voluntary agreement this week. The case focused on Thomas, the transgender swimmer, who competed for the Ivy League school in 2022 when she became the first openly transgender athlete to win a Division I title. The department investigated Penn as part of the Trump administration's broader attempt to remove transgender athletes from girls and women's sports, finding the college violated the rights of female athletes. So Penn agreed to restore all individual Division I swimming records and titles to female athletes who lost out to Thomas and sent a personalized apology letter to each of those swimmers. Quote, while Penn's policies during the 2021-22 swim season were in accordance with NCAA eligibility rules at the time, we acknowledge that some student athletes were disadvantaged by those rules, Penn President J. Larry Jamison said in a statement. We recognize this and will apologize to those who experienced a competitive disadvantage or experienced anxiety because of the policies in effect at the time. Dateline Missouri City, Texas, the owner of the Jubilee apartment complex in Missouri City, plagued by non-working elevators for months, is giving a public apology. One elevator is working at the Jubilee Senior Apartment Complex. Second one has been promised to be up and running this week. Australian airline Qantas said Wednesday a hacker made off with a trove of customers' personal data, including passenger names, emails, phone numbers, birth dates, and frequent flyer numbers. The company said in a statement a cyber criminal targeted one of its call centers and gained access to a third-party customer service platform that holds records for 6 million passengers. Qantas apologized to customers and said while it's still investigating the proportion of data stolen, quote, we expect it will be significant, unquote. The system that was breached did not contain credit card and passport details or other personal financial information. Liam Gallagher has issued an apology for using a racial slur in a social media post earlier this week. The Oasis singer took to X, where he wrote an apology for a since-deleted post he made Monday using a slur used to mock East Asian people, according to The Independent. Sorry if I offended anyone with my tweet before. It wasn't intentional. You know I love you all and I do not discriminate. Peace and love, LG, he wrote without punctuation. Gallagher used the racial slur in an X post, to which one user wrote, Liam, you can't say that. He replied, why? 'Cause it's racist, came the reply. His offensive post came shortly ahead of the Oasis' long-awaited reunion tour. Oh, no, it wasn't designed to get publicity. And, of course, the BBC's weekly apology came this week. A formal apology after broadcasting a controversial performance from the rap punk group Bob Villain at Glastonbury last weekend. It led its crowd in a chant of death to the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. BBC Director General Tim Davey wrote to staff in an internal memo, quote, I deeply regret that such offensive and deplorable behavior appeared on the BBC and want to say sorry to our audience and to all of you, but in particular to Jewish colleagues and the Jewish community. We're unequivocal that there can be no place for anti-Semitism at the BBC, unquote. They're going to keep high-risk acts off live broadcasts from now on. Bob Villain's set led to some backlash within the music industry and beyond. Local police opened a criminal investigation. The band's U.S. visas were revoked for its upcoming performances, proving that Bob Villain is no Liam Gallagher. The apologies of the week. We'll be right back.
many days that I do. Gotta get up and take on that world. When you're an idol, it's no cliche, it's the truth. Joy. I'd sure look like a fool, dead in a dish somewhere with a mind full of chemicals like some cheese-eating high school boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Would love to welcome you back. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for helping today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. Where'd that come from? And playlist of all the music heard here on, and a lot of stuff to watch and listen to and read and talk about with your children, all at harryshearer.com, and I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long. from the Crescent City.